My shoes are very popular today.
What are you wearing? What do you got?
And I just everyone. There's some Dunks. They're women's shoes.
Oh, you women's got them in men's size, but you got the women's colorway.
Have the best colors.
I agree. Thank you for breaking down the gender binary.
No, somebody, it's like four people. I'm in New York today, as you guys can see. I'm 10 yards away from Conway the Machine, a.k.a.
There it is.
There it is.
I'm already bored by
this. Oh, are you? Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a problem with having your, you are like in your heart a producer. So no matter what havoc we try to create, you always side with Alabaster, and I don't like it.
Is boredom the reason why you were mopping your forehead with napkins like 3 seconds before we started the show? Is that why you were just sweating with boredom?
Always.
Yeah.
Always sweaty. I'm like Patrick Ewing in a sauna, 24/7, 365.
You should take a shower before the show. It's the appropriate thing to do if you respect us, like Pablo.
You're welcome. You are welcome. Alabaster, you most of all are welcome for my hygiene.
You know what? I appreciate you all for doing this show today. But I really actually do want to talk about the first topic because this is one of those juicy stories that somehow we didn't like. I don't think we covered enough in April when it first broke. And my question for you all is, what do you make of the NFL's punishment of the Dolphins and Stephen Ross?
Dominique is making noises and I want to find out why. Why are you making noises?
Because this is more uniquely my wheelhouse than any other topic ever talk about. And so, like, I've been on First Take. I've been getting up. I've been dining on this shit all day.
You are
when
still
I saw the
up.
Rundown, when I saw this person in the rundown, I was like, oh, we're catering to Dominique today. I see what's happening here.
Man.
For the podcast audience, Dominique is wearing a dinner bib, and he is clanking forks and knives together.
Oh, I've been eating on this all morning, in part because when they were tanking, if you remember, I was bold enough to call them tankers and reprehensible. And of course,
morally
I got the internet
abhorrent or something like that.
I think it was reprehensible. I said it.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. Morally reprehensible.
And then I got banged on for saying that because, of course, they're not doing that. And then, of course, this happens. And it's not only as bad as I thought, it was worse. And then they follow it with this garbage ass punishment. Like it's actually. And so here we go. I'll frame this for you and then I'll get out the way.
Please.
It is my belief that the point of a punishment is to, one, get closer to justice, two, deter other people from committing the same infraction, and in this particular case, it is also to communicate to the fans, in this case, what you represent as an organization, meaning the NFL. And it seems to me that they are falling short on all three counts. This is not a deterrent. Because if I'm tampering in order to get a Hall of Fame coach and a Hall of Fame quarterback, one first round draft pick and a third round draft pick, it's worth the risk. I'm going to take that gamble every time if I'm an owner. So it does not deter anybody from doing this. It does not exact anything close to justice because the teams that were there affected three teams over 3 years. And it does not express that they actually, because we saw what they did to Calvin Ridley, because they cared about the integrity of the game. This guy, who was not even on his team at the time, bet on some football games. They gave that man a year, and it cost him $11.5 million. And you know what? I woke up and said, you know, dude, the NFL is damn serious about gambling. They fined a billionaire $1.5 million and told him, why don't you take a vacation for a couple of months? See you in October. Like, to me, this, and I'll be quiet because I've been eating on it all day. But
I'm not hungry.
That is me trying to boil it down to its simplest form. It's like, this is not a deterrent. It does not express to us. And so another thing, the NFL is the only sport I feel like that we don't like accept that there is just flat out stanking ass tanking. And I don't think it's a coincidence that it is also the most popular sport. And so baseball, they tank away. Basketball, tank away. Football, it happens and we think it's a big deal, but the NFL expressed to us by this punishment, you know what? Tanking ain't that big deal. He wasn't even tanking, even though we found that he was tanking. If you read what Goodell's comments said.
So there are really, I mean, so man, I have so much to say in response to a flexing Dominique Foxworth. For the podcast audience, Dominique is flexing, literally. So what the NFL investigated was two separate menu items, Jacoby, right? There was the tampering because Tom Brady, they were going after him when he was a Patriot. They were going after him when he was a Buccaneer. They were going after him as the NFL world was spinning around like Dominique is spinning in his chair. They were always flirting with Tom Brady, and Tom Brady was always flirting with them. The second menu item, though, is the thing that is, to me, the juicier steak, and I'm curious, Jacoby, if you agree with this, because it does speak to the thing the NFL actually fears, right? Which is, what do we do about teams that are pretty transparently valuing the draft over the season that they're playing at any given moment? And that's where I think there's a fascinating conversation around, like, how a team gets away with tanking, what tanking really means, how serious you are about stopping tanking if you have a draft in the first place, right? Because a lot of this, Dominique, to me, feels like theater. It feels like everybody knows what happens when you have a draft. And so the idea of, like, come down hard on a tanking team, it's like, you don't want to come down as hard as you could, though. You don't ever want to come down as hard as you could.
Never.
Well, I'm glad you sort of chapterized it like that. And I'll start with the tanking because that's where you ended. Is why not tank? Right? If this sport, all sports prioritize winning games. But like this sport, because of the quantity of the games, every single win is so precious. And winning is everything. It's the only thing, as famously said. Here's the thing. To win games, sometimes the best thing to do is to lose games, and everybody knows that. And like Dominique said, we know that in the NBA, and they do it. Look at this MLB trade deadline. It's buyers and sellers. You're either one or the other. You're either trying to be as bad as possible or as good as possible.
Yes.
And we watched it play out all day yesterday. And in this instance, they probably should have lost more games, and the NBA has done a decent job of recognizing that it's happening and then changing the draft probabilities to sort of say, listen, being the worst, and being the fifth worst is kind of the same thing. So at least it ups the competitiveness a little bit. And I feel like the NFL is going to do something similar because they are just so like worst record, first pick, second worst record, second pick. And that structure in itself, it doesn't just deter tanking. It encourages tanking. That is tank catnip for the tankers. So they need to change that if they want to get rid of the tanking. And the second thing, tampering, I look at tampering like jaywalking. We need the rule, but we don't need to enforce it. Like if Stephen Ross, someone says to Stephen Ross, you know, I talked to Tom Brady yesterday. He might be interested in going to the Dolphins. Here's his phone number. Stephen Ross says, sorry, I'm not going to make that phone call because it's against the rules. Like, no, he's making that phone call 100 times out of 100. Like tanking.
He shouldn't, though.
Well, the two things that I'll put a bone in it like this. The tanking, they need to change the draft odds. It's just too, like, binary, too simple. And number two.
Or abolish it. I'm sorry.
Tampering, yeah, exactly. Tampering, yep. Should it happens. It always happens. They shouldn't even enforce this rule. Like, they really should not enforce the rules. It is jaywalking to me. Continue.
So okay. Hold on, because Dominique's gotten a little gun-shy suddenly. He's self-aware about how much he has to say and wants to say, and he's trying to be mindful
of
us.
Yeah, we don't care, Dominique.
And this is, I just want to point out something to Dominique before he jumps in again and starts salivating and slobbering all over this topic. The reasons why Stephen Ross still has an NFL team, right? There are two reasons. None of them have to do with tampering, and Jacoby's right. Like, Goodell says that this is unprecedented scope and severity in terms of the violations that tampering entailed here with Brady, all of that, I think is true. But the reason why Stephen Ross still has an NFL team is twofold. Number one, he did not put in writing, I will pay you $100,000 for every loss that you take deliberately. Instead, he can say, ha 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 ha, just kidding. And everybody around him can say, ha ha ha, he was also kidding. And Brian Flores is very dead serious and he's saying he was not kidding. The second reason, though, Dominique, is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're welcome. Ryan Fitzpatrick winning those damn games at the end of the season. They cited it. They played hard at the end of the season, and Ryan Fitzpatrick why Stephen Ross still owns the Dolphins.
Man, if I am glad you said that and not Jacoby, because finding a way to jump over the black head coach and give credit to the bad white quarterback in this situation blows my mind. Blows my mind. Like, that is incredible. Incredible. Incredible.
I credit Flores for seeing the vision. He saw the vision before anybody else did. He saw Ryan Fitzpatrick as the key, but please continue.
okay, so whatever. The first thing, the only reason why that's particularly high in my mind right now, the racial component, is because it matters. Because when Detroit was embarking on a rebuild, they gave a contract of 6 years to their coach. When the same thing was happening in Carolina, 6 years to Dan Campbell up there, Matt Rhule in Carolina. And when they hired their black coach, it feels as if, or those other coaches weren't black, but when the Dolphins hired their coach, who happened to be black, it feels as if they were hiring him in order to, like, put a tally up on the scoreboard for the NFL and for themselves in diversity, and had no intention of giving him a fair chance, which is connected, in my view, is connected directly to both the tanking and the tampering, because he has a coach and he's already looking to hire another coach. While maybe he was joking, I could see the $100,000 being a joke, but that joke is only relevant because obviously that's what he wants. And so to do that, we can talk about how unfair it is to the players on the team who have, like, sacrificed everything they could to get to this opportunity. And we could talk about how there are implicit things or things implied in a contract that you don't have to write down. You just shouldn't have to write down you're going to do X amount of film study, because that's implied. You should not have to write down, hey, I'm not going to throw any games as a player, because that's implied. You should not have to write down as a owner or an organization that we are going to give you the best chance we can to succeed. And to me, that's also terrible. Like, I know how difficult it is to get to the NFL. It's even more difficult to succeed in the NFL. The idea that you have worked to this opportunity and you were drafted to a team, so you didn't have a choice. You were stuck on a team with an organization that is actively trying to screw you. Like, that seems terrible. And then the same thing for Brian Flores. We know how difficult it is for black coaches to get jobs. We know how difficult it is for them to get second jobs. They brought him in and they gave him a black job. They're like, hey, this is the job we give black coaches. You go in there, you fail. We want you to fail. We're going to watch you fail. And then we're going to fire you. And then we're good for a couple of years. We don't have to hire another black coach. So all of that together is why this is really disgusting to me. And we talk about the integrity of the game. It's something that the league and the commissioner use as a weapon often to come down hard on players like Calvin Ridley or anyone else. Like, this is impacting the integrity of the game. Now that gambling is legal, they have gambling partners.
Yes.
The idea that you could have this happening in the sport that is most gambled on in this country and not come down hard and say we aren't going to accept this is, to me, crazy. And it speaks to the flawed construction of this, is that somehow Roger Goodell is expected to penalize and regulate the people he works for. And it's not as if the other owners are not incentivized to keep these penalties low, because they know that they're doing some shit too. And they want to have their backs covered when this foolishness comes up. So it's just, it's not fair, and it's absurd and terrible on a lot of levels. And Stephen Ross, $100,000 or $1,000,005 is, it's like $100 to, like,
yeah, you know, no, he has 10,000, 100,000s. Like, this is something that is just not, like, the idea that could be a joke or very plausible to me totally seems like
that's
it could be
couch
possible.
Cushion money. And then
couch, like, cushion money.
You can't come to NFL events for a couple months.
Oh no, bro. Oh, Bruce, okay. Beal can't go to meetings. He can't go to meetings.
Oh,
right.
My
Bruce
God.
Beal, by the way, who was the guy that Tom Brady was directly talking to. They apparently, according to Jeff Darlington on ESPN Daily Today, they live in, like, the same condo building in Manhattan. They've been friends for years. This is how this tampering that has been unprecedented can come to pass. But Dominique said so many valuable things in his answer just then that I want to sort of address, because what I think we can all agree on is that this was the worst tank job in sports history. And I say that for so many different reasons. Number one, if you're going to do a tank job, like, A, you need to not talk about how you're doing a tank job. And you can't talk about how you're doing a tank job. The first rule of Tank Club is don't talk about Tank Club. You can't break the rules of Tank Club with a guy in Brian Flores, Dominique, who is not on board with the plan. Like, this is what made no sense to me, right? If you're a smart team that is going to try and game the system as they are incentivized to do because there is a draft, and there are all of these moral and ethical compromises that involve race as a factor, as you said, which is absolutely correct, right? But if you're going to do it in a way that doesn't get you in trouble and sort of minimizes the moral lines you end up crossing, you have to have everybody, as many people as you can, because the players in general are not going to be involved in this, right? You have to have the coach and the front office all pulling in the same direction. And Brian Flores is the least go-along to get-along dude in NFL history. He literally put in writing in a massive racial discrimination lawsuit all of the ways in which this had compromised his sense of ethics and dignity and the job description that he thought he had signed up for. So to me, it's just incompetence above and running through all of this on top of the inherent just like, wow, I don't really know how you resolve the fact that you're trying to not win games in a sport where everybody should be winning games.
You should be tanking. If I was a consultant like from another country and someone showed me how the draft was structured and how the league works, and you're looking at yourself in the mirror and you're the Dolphins saying, we are not just not making the playoffs, we are a bad football team, you should be losing those games. Like the whole idea is to win games, and the way that it's structured, losing games help you win games. It shouldn't be structured this way. Like that's also the problem.
Yeah, Dominique, just on that, Jacoby, because I agree with you, and Dominique is shaking his head. My opinion is Jacoby's right on this. In fact, if you are a crazy, hyper-competitive, championship-obsessed person, you want to go and get Joe Burrow in the NFL draft, right? You don't actually care about the games in the present tense because what you want to do is win a title. And the evidence suggests that you need a quarterback to do that. And this is why this whole story is about quarterbacks, too.
But I mean, the evidence does not suggest that you have to have the number one overall pick. But I do think that there's something to be said. And this is, I understand, this is where I'm going to lose numbers, people, is this is about culture. It's about something that you cannot measure, that is very difficult. And I think it's different. I understand in baseball, which is an individual sport, frankly, I understand how tanking may not impact the results on the field or the long-term cultural or culture on an organization. And same thing for basketball. The teams are so small and it's so impacted by one player, is if you get that one guy, you can clean house and rebuild the culture. Football's not like that. Football is an entire organization-wide culture, and I don't think it's a coincidence that the teams that have consistent success are also teams that are run well and have this type of culture. So, like, I know it's hard. Like, I can't prove this the same way. Like, I understand your point. It's very logical, your point. All right? If you want to win, get better players. Better players are higher in the draft. We should lose now. I get it. I don't have the same comparison that is just as apples to apples as that one, but I do believe that having been a part of a number of organizations, that the culture of the organization freaking matters. And it's not a coincidence that, like, the Ravens, for example, have been good as long as they existed, or at least competitive for as long as they existed. And not never until now have they had a, like, real, real deal quarterback. And it's not because it is because they weren't tanking. It's because they were the Browns, It got to Baltimore, and things changed.
Can we pivot this into, is Joe Flacco elite? Can we do that? Can we work that in somehow?
Can we work that in somehow?
ESPN. But
I
will say,
we just did.
Before Alabaster interjects, I just want to retort, and I agree with you. I think winning culture is very important, especially with younger players, and like, you know, and losing is depressing and it sucks. And it's just like,
all true.
It's all that I agree with you there. However, this sport is unique in this. It is a team sport where there's one position that affects the outcome of the game more than any other individual position in any sport. You could say like a hockey goalie maybe or something like that. However, the quarterback play affects the team's performance more than any other individual in a team sport, which is why I think this quarterback drafting thing is so important, which is why the tanking is somewhat different in this sport than others because of the importance of the quarterback.
I agree, but we also don't, because the quarterback position is so dependent, we are not as certain about quarterback prospects as we are about pitchers, hitters, basketball players. Like, we don't know. And we're wrong at the top of the draft so often that, to me, the math doesn't work out. Because it's also so like the Kyler Murray contract clause, it exists because the culture there is garbage. That's why it exists. I'm telling you that teams that I went to, the culture, it was understood. Like, to me, culture is like the understood activities and behaviors and process. I'm getting choked up because it means so much to me. But those processes and behaviors are so important to me that I know.
Ray Lewis is telling me a motivational speech and leading me in prayer. What we call crime. We're losing recipes.
That to me is
recipes.
Oh my God. is what matters.
I got you.
Yeah, that to me is what matters so much about all of this, is the culture, it matters. And it impacts the way that you perform, and it impacts the way that you prepare.
Can I ask you a question?
That's culture. That is debatable. This man
came all the way
down
to where I am from, far away, to give me a sweaty hug. Make sure I say sweaty
must have been
before
so
he gets
sweaty.
Back. Oh, he still has my earpiece. He still has his earpiece in, so he can hear that I said.
I can see the humidity level on the glass in Dominique's square changing because Jacoby entered it alabaster.
Dominique, I have a question. And obviously, you played in a really unique situation by getting
ready to
play
fight
with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, who are like, you know, two of the greatest defensive football players of all time, and built like a very
Champ Bailey too. I played with
Champ Bailey too. Okay, but my main question is that's a unique situation that you can't really recreate. But can you create a winning culture without a good quarterback? Because you have no chance of really winning without one.
Hold on, did you just listen to what you said? No.
Oh
wow! My wife said that to me.
But like, you can't like
terrifying.
Bank on getting two of the best players of all time.
Same.
Okay, so I would say that yes, the Ravens had Ray Lewis, and then they got Ed Reed, and they had Jonathan Ogden. But if you think back to all those teams, there were a lot of players around them that played a lot better than I think their talent suggested. And I think that's a result of the culture that was created in the organization, which was created by Ozzie Newsome and carried on by the players that he brought in. So I think that's the part that is hard to measure. Of course, it's easy to say if you get Ray Lewis or Ed Reed, but Ed Reed, like the culture, like Ed Reed, we've seen these clips where Ed is talking about how you have to keep your locker room clean because it's a representation of who you are as a person. That's the type of stuff. That is, Ed Reed didn't come up with that out of nowhere. That is things that he believed and were reinforced by the organization. And I know it sounds small, and I agree it's stupid. You don't win or lose by picking up your tape. But I do believe that it is an indication of an organization that has culture. I was in Denver, which is another organization that was very successful throughout the Shanahan period. I think it was in part because of Coach Shanahan's ability to scheme up run game, but it also was in part of the culture that existed there when I showed up, which was kind of perpetuated by Rod Smith and created and perpetuated by players like Rod Smith. Like, it freaking matters, and it's hard to explain and justify, but it matters. And in football, you can't just have a stink-ass culture and drop teams in there. And it's not a coincidence that we have these – we saw Randy Moss go to Oakland and be garbage and then go to New England and set records. Like, these things matter to me.
Well, I mean, in that equation too, Tom Brady seems to be a complicating variable. But I take your larger.
You think Randy Moss is going to be bad?
No, I know. Look, the larger point you're making. The larger point you're making is right. Culture is underrated. I firmly agree with you on that. Where I come at this is when we talk about like a team that is smart to rebuild / tank, like. The way that it's most justified is when you are a new regime and you need to clean house, right? Like the best teams that do this, it's not, like this is why the Dolphins don't have my sympathy, right? They had been doing things their way for so long, and then they were like, all right, finally, we should try something different. Let's just try and tank. In reality, right? Like I think there are more justifiable scenarios where whether it's new ownership or a new front office, when they come in and they have to actually build a culture from scratch. And the way to do that, and this is where Alabaster, I think, has a point underneath, I assume, his layers of self-defense mechanisms, because I saw the card come out already that he wanted to jump back in. It's that, hey, like sometimes a blank slate is part of that process, the process of building a new culture, because sometimes you're stuck in a bad one and you need to clean house. And ideally, all of those things happen in conjunction. Often they don't, but ideally, a tank job happens in conjunction with that, if you're trying to do it right.
So I just want to say this very quickly, that Dominique, I think you owe me an apology for all the times you've defended Kevin Durant and the Nets, because if culture matters, then you can't support those guys who have just destroyed the culture of an organization. But I want to move back to football for a second. And my question is...
Another conversation.
My question is on this one.
I thought that was a segue, but it's not.
No. I have a Tom Brady aspect.
The person at the top creates the culture.
Why didn't Tom Brady get any sort of punishment or pushback for this? Like, we have Ben Volen basically saying he was flirting with the Dolphins as much as the Dolphins were flirting with him. Can you only tamper as a team not as a player, because like he wanted like an ownership stake in this team. That's not like he was in a weird limbo area.
Well, if he got the ownership stake, then you could penalize him. Like I don't get the point here. It seems quite clear that there is a power imbalance.
Yeah, penalizing players is never the solution. And Tom Brady's there's been three times that the NFL has taken away a first round draft pick, and Tom Brady's been involved in every single one.
That's so outstanding. Great. That is stat right there. Yeah, I don't know. To me, it seems obvious that there's an obvious power imbalance. There's higher expectations, and the CBA even says that there should be higher expectations for the owners than the players, even though the players seem to get penalized a lot more aggressively for similarly positioned infractions. But I think that the owner of the team involved in some tanking, or even general managers or coaches, like there's a different expectation for them than it should be for a player. And I'm no Tom Brady apologist, but if you can use your football ability to finagle your way into an ownership stake of a football team, then you're damn right you better be tanking. Go tank away, tankathon. If I'm Tom Brady, I'm looking for the next team who's on board with
By the way, can we it also is very funny, right? If Tom Brady did not win that Super Bowl with the Bucks, like it would be a lot funnier. That's my frustration with this story. Like the idea that he was about to be a Dolphin. He was about to be a New Orleans Saint. If Drew Brees, according to Jeff Darlington, had gotten the Monday Night Football job at ESPN, Tom Brady would have been a Saint. But he wound up with his third choice, the Bucks,
and because
he won a goddamn Super Bowl, we can't even make the jokes that this story is like daring us basically to make about Dolphins fans and Bucks fans, really.
And as for the Nets, the culture there is garbage, but it was garbage before they got there. It was garbage. You reinforced the garbage.
It's the
by
third
firing.
Topic. It's on the menu, buddy. It's on the menu.
Alabaster. I feel like. Yet. Do we? Can we just go? Can we shoots and ladders our way to that topic now? I feel like we're
all. No. Sorry, I really played defense on the show. I threw like a little speed bump in there and completely derailed. It was a high level discussion. So yeah, we'll move to KD first. And my question for you is: apparently, KD and Josiah are meeting this week. Zach Lowe has said that they haven't given up the idea of reconciling with Kevin Durant. My question is: what are the chances that happens? Can they fix the relationship?
90%.
I mean, reconciliation.
Nice.
He's going. This is what's going to happen. I mean, this is going to happen. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, Joe Harris, Seth Curry, Nick Claxton, T.J. Warren, Royce O'Neal. That team's going to go 12-3 in the first 15 games, and Kyrie's going to have like four 40-point games. And they're going to look like the best team in basketball, and we're going to forget this whole summer ever happened. And that is how this is going to play out.
You had me, as you know, you had me at Ben Simmons. I just looked up, Dominique, the definition of reconciliation, because I feel like our show often demands that we define the terms that we're arguing about. We're not arguing about, because we're a fake television show that argues about nothing. But the noun means reconciliation, the restoration of friendly relations, the action of making one view or belief compatible with another. So to me, give me 99% on that.
Oh,
the idea that Kevin Durant can just get along with his employer. Nah, I'm Price is writing this. Price is writing is what you are, Jacoby. What you got, like, Dominique?
I thought we were
what
on the same team. You're destroying our team culture. Yeah, I got 50.
You really are.
I got 50%. I think it's a toss up. You know, like it could go one way, it could go the other way. His grievances have not gone away because we don't know what they are in the first place, So it's hard for me. Here we go, Jacoby. It's hard for me to project how he will, if he's willing to reconcile or not. I think it's encouraging that he's going to have the meeting. But how can I say that someone is going to reconcile if I don't know what they're upset about?
But like,
you
don't take the meeting unless you're willing to reconcile. You do not take the meeting. If he truly you don't take the meeting. You don't take
it. This is the question, though, that Dominique, that I think should be asked is, if you're meeting with the owner of the team you're employed by, there are two ways this goes. One is reconciliation. The other is telling him, I am not going to play any games, so you better trade me. Otherwise, it's going to get worse for you.
You don't need to meet in person to do that, I guess. But I assume that Kevin Durant would only have the meeting if he's showing up he's showing up in good faith. Oh, are we hugging? Oh,
what is happening?
The second hug that Dominique depicted in so far today.
I think you just grew 6 inches.
I know. I'm not.
Can you please put Jacoby's face onto KD's face?
No. So I think that Kevin Durant is coming with an open heart because he's a good human being who's willing to do those sorts of things. But that means that the meeting could go poorly and could go the other way. That's why I went 50-50. And Pablo, I have to attack your 99 because it's clear that you aren't as sure as you think you are. You're not as certain as you're presenting right now, but you still went 99 to box out Jacoby because you're a terrible teammate.
Well, I wanted to really box out you. That was really why I did it.
Well, you don't have to box me out because I understand that if we get the rebound as a team, then we can go in transition. I'm not stat chasing like you out here trying to get a triple-double when you don't deserve it.
Wow, how dare you cast me as anti-reconciliation? How dare you? I am here to restore friendly relations, and it is slander to suggest otherwise.
The fact of the matter is no one's offering enough for KD to trade KD, and it's not. There's gonna be no acceptable trade. So if you're the Nets, you just do everything you can to keep him in your uniform. And, and you know what? I think this is winning is the best deodorant. Yeah, things stink. Do you know why they stink? Because y'all lost 11 straight games at the end of the year last year. Y'all got swept by the Celtics. Like that is why Kyrie didn't get re-signed. That is why KD asked for a trade, because they lost and they looked bad doing it, and it stunk. Guess what? If they start hot, everything works. Everything's going to work. This is the Nets, to me, are like my sneaky championship bet right now, because you get great odds.
Oh, my God. We're doing it.
I'm telling you.
We're doing it.
I'm telling you.
I mean, I have won a number of games. I smell the same after I win and after I lose.
Well, Pablo showers before every pumps. Show, so he's fresh and clean.
Same right. Amount of sunlight game. Is the I mean, best disinfectant. Winning's really a great deodorant. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
a championship. Know. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, man, it's like plastic surgery. Yeah.
We'll see. You know what happens with them. I think you're right. The regular season is fine, but that doesn't matter. They had the closest sweep in history, which I guess is something to be proud of.
I like to use that point too. But it was
what,
a sweep.
What
but,
is that?
But
it was a tight sweep. I think that's the question that comes to my mind. And I guess we'll have this conversation once the reconciliation actually happens. But the question that comes to mind is Steve Nash?
Oh, yeah. Steve Nash. Everybody likes Steve Nash, so no one wants to criticize him. But it's kind of like, well, this whole thing fell apart, and everyone's mad, and everyone wants to leave the team, and no one had a good time. I wonder if maybe we should
Steve Nash showed up as the substitute teacher who was cool, who put his chair around backwards, sat down, and Kyrie Irving shot a goddamn like spitball right in his eye socket immediately.
Yep.
Like, this is not going to work.
We all talk about how the playoffs are different in all these sports. I don't actually think they are in other sports, but in basketball, the playoffs are actually very different.
Facts.
Because there is a lot more coaching going into the playoff games and adjustments, in-game adjustments, because like you got 82, you got 82 regular season games. You're not like putting together a specific game plan for all those games. Football, you do, specific game plan every game. You kind of attack every game the same way you would a playoff game in football. Maybe you hold some things back, but in basketball, it kind of feels like they run their stuff all season long. Then they get to the playoffs, and that's when they start adjusting, which is why none of this matters until we get to the playoffs. And I'm not a skilled enough basketball analyst, or I guess I didn't put in enough time to actually know what Steve Nash did or didn't do, but I know getting swept is bad, and it's not only on the players. Like, he didn't do whatever he was supposed to do, because getting swept by a first-year coach, unacceptable. Not when you got two Hall of Famers on your team.
I don't know if you heard, but it was the closest sweep ever.
Closest sweep in the history of sweeps.
My bad. I take that back. I take it back.
Yeah.
Soto.
All right, Allie. Let's talk Soto.
Okay. Let's move on to one.
It won't be long. Yeah, see how quick we can do this.
We're actually going to go back to this. Like, okay, let's do it.
You get the best left-handed hitter since Barry Bonds gets traded, we should probably at least mention it. My question, what's the bigger story? The Padres going all in, or the Nationals trading a generational player in Juan Soto?
First of all,
let me just say something on this topic.
I love this as
someone who's worked at ESPN for 23 years. This is one of my favorite topics, because none of us know who any of these prospects are for the Padres, but we hear but we hear Jeff Passan say, oh, but they've got a historical arm. They've got an 18-year-old that can throw 100 miles an hour. They've got this guy and that guy.
6'7" guy. CJ, the most power in the minors.
Oh, yeah, Mackenzie Gore and Robert Hassel III and CJ Abrams and James Wood. Oh God, what a historic haul they
Trotter
got back.
And
we don't
Jason,
know any of these guys. None of them.
Alvy.
None of
those
them.
Those are names I just made up. I just
None
made up
of them. Yeah. But yet here we are talking to microphones, being like, people think the story is Juan Soto, but really it's the prospects that the Nationals got back. I have no. If Mackenzie Gore could have driven my Uber on the way here, and I would have no idea who he is.
Yeah.
Don't even
and
know.
And he could have said, I'm Mackenzie Gore, and you would forget by the time you got on set that Mackenzie Gore dropped you off.
He could have been one of those Uber drivers that watches videos on like his dash,
and the
video could have been of him playing, and I still would not register.
Yes, exactly.
I was going to start this by promising our viewers that we weren't going to do too much baseball, so don't change, but. We're not going to do any baseball. We're going to make jokes about how nobody knows what they're talking about in this. Like,
yes.
I know I've heard, I live in D.C. I was there when they won the World Series, and I hear about how good Juan Soto is occasionally, because even in the city where they win the World Series and they have the best left-handed hitter since Barry Bonds, it's not that much of a topic, so I hope it works out. Tatis get healthy. Like, I heard he's hurt, right? He's hurt. When he get healthy, they'll be together. So they can lose to the Dodgers like everybody else is going to, right? That's generally what's happening, right?
So hold on, though, because I do think that for as flimsy as our minor league prospect analysis has been, it's not incorrect, right? Because at the end of, not to use another cliche, at the end of the day, like, give me the dude who I know is like a 23-year-old, 24-year-old, soon enough, Ted Williams. I don't know. Not only do we not know who these guys are, nobody who knows who these guys are can tell
Pablo,
me that they're definitely going to be guys.
I'm going to one-up you like you did Jacoby last segment. At the beginning of the day, give me Juan Soto. I don't even got to wait 24 hours. Kick it off. What time your alarm go off? 6?
At
seven?
Sunrise, bring me Juan Soto.
As soon as that sweet, sweet fireball peeks its eyes over the horizon, I want Juan Soto.
Yes, structure a human sacrifice ritual platform upon which Mackenzie Gore and Robert Hassel III and CJ Abrams and James Wood and Harlan Susana, that's a great fake name, and Luke Voigt can be strapped to feed to the sun god that is Juan Soto.
But one thing I love about this is Eric Hosmer has a no-trade clause. He's like, oh, no, this is why I have a no-trade clause. I ain't going to the Nationals. He's like, this is why I have that.
No,
that ain't happening.
So,
don't put my name in this.
This is the other part of the story that I actually find interesting, which is that, like, it's about time that San Diego became a place that mattered in sports.
This is the biggest thing that happened in San Diego since Anchorman. Like, have you ever been to that park? Have you been to a Padres game? It is fantastic. They have this Gaslight District around
it. Is it still Petco?
It's beautiful.
Is it still called Petco?
I believe so.
Are they still making Petcos?
Oh, it was great. I was next to the suites.
It can't possibly be Petco.
I was next to the suites.
Do they? Petco.
They got free beer right adjacent to me, and the guy just started handing us beers all game long. They're just so nice down there.
San Diego,
I wouldn't
want to
leave
so
San
rich
Diego
too.
Either.
Like the city is so rich. The weather's perfect. It's just a great place to be. But who, like, how long is their money, the ownership there? Because
they're going to
have
to pay
Tatis and Soto. Like, I hope they can do it because
$1 billion.
This is really, really bad trade. Alabaster, baseball.
So, that's one of the interesting things is we've never actually seen a small market team go in like this. They're usually, in certain ways, small market MLB teams are farm systems for the Red Sox, Yankees, and Dodgers. So them pairing 23-year-old Fernando Tatis with the best hitter in the world, someone who is going to draw a bigger trade package than Shohei Ohtani. And it's fascinating that someone's actually competing with the Dodgers, because we usually see teams with less money just pack it in and be like, nah, we're not going to, we can't compete with you guys. We have to do
that
it like
BME.
The Rays.
That BME.
Yeah. I assume they have the contract worked out. Yeah, I got it. You have to explain it. It's a problem, but I assume they have the contract figured out already. Like, you won't make this trade unless you have the contract figured out.
You're planning on paying. You're planning on paying.
But this is part of the game, because Scott Boras is Juan Soto's agent. Scott Boras has said to Jeff Passan that he wants the first $500 million contract. Mahomes came close, didn't quite make it. He wants Juan Soto to be the first $500 million player. And so that is to come. You don't negotiate that before you make the trade, because Scott Boras has no one's. No,
they're
no,
going to
Scott Boras doesn't want to do that. Scott Boras is going to hold him. I think they will pay, but I think Scott Boras is going to maximize how much of that $500 million that is on the table.
That's malpractice if you traded away all of these great prospects that we all know and love for a player. So
well, they have like, what is it? Alabaster, for baseball nerdery's sake, they have like 2.5 years with Soto left. So it's a unique deal. It's really a unique deal.
Not enough.
Well, they could win two. The other part about this is they have Manny Machado, who, while excellent, is going to be on the other side of 30 by the time that Juan Soto becomes a free agent. He's being paid $30 million a year. My guess is that when Soto is up, they will offload that contract to build around those two in the middle of the lineup. Also, just from D.C., Dominique, sad day for us. We've gotten rid of Trey Turner, Juan Soto, and Bryce Harper all within a 3-year span, and those guys are probably the three best players in the National League. So that sucks.
We're really good at
You're still close enough to the World Series that nothing matters. It's like the Lakers.
We never even got to the Heat. How dare you?
Yeah, we didn't talk about the Heat.
Oh, great Photoshop. Yeah. That is that is the best Photoshop you guys have done for the podcast audience. Jacoby.
This
is incredible.
I don't think you cannot put my head on a black man's body in 2022 and put it on television. This is non-consensual. I was not involved in this. Bro.
He puts a hood on all day and only gets fed, not that type of hood, and only gets his body
touched. Oh, God. Oh, God.
It was Pablo's idea. Well, if anybody gets fired, make sure it's Pablo.
I don't know why or how, but no.
Yeah.
Not that type of hood has a lot of meanings, and none of them are.
I don't even know what that means either. So.